You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. In the next part of the program, we're going to talk about something very, very mysterious. And it's about Mars. It's about the plumes of methane on Mars. And maybe you were able to watch like I did yesterday. NASA has teleconferences that we reporters can log into and watch NASA scientists talk about new research that they're reporting on. Sometimes the research gets reported not just by NASA, but in journals at the same time. And in this case, it was reported in the journal Science. And what they were talking about was something really, really mysterious. And this was the discovery of a plume of methane gas that rose from the surface of Mars back in early 2003. And the question that was on the minds and still on the minds of all of NASA folks who studied this is, where do you get a plume of methane gas coming from on Mars? Now, we know it's possible that methane could be made in a couple of different ways, and scientists were on there to talk about the different ways that methane can be made. We know if you're on Earth, you know how methane is made. It could come from swamp gas, right? It could be made by biological methods that are made here on Earth. Bacteria it comes stored from old bacteria, sometimes stored underground. When you drill for oil or gas, you get methane belching up. Or it could be made from other kinds of ways on Mars. It didn't have to come from the biological, or maybe the geological side of it. Maybe there was water. We know there's water. It leaked underground and hit a hot spot, and the water, released. The methane came belching out of the side. Well, we're going to discuss that with Michael Mumma. He is a senior planetary scientist and director of the Goddard Center for Astrobiology at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt. He joins us from a studio there. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Mumma.
Oh, thanks very much, Ira. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right, is this as mysterious as to you as it is to us here? As it is a wonderfully mysterious discovery?
It is, actually. We're all puzzling about what could be generating this methane and how it can be released from the surface of Mars.
Now, do you have one theory that you prefer over the other? Let's talk about the two theories. I mentioned that there could be the biological side like there is here on Earth, right?
That's correct. Here we have both microbes that make methane, we call them methanogens, and some that actually use the methane as food. Mm-hmm. Called methanotrophs. So it could be biology that we're responsible for the methane on Mars.
Or it could be geology. How could geology make methane?
There actually are two different ways in which methane is made by geology on Earth. The first, of course, is in effluents from volcanoes, gas emerging during volcanic eruptions. Can, in fact, release methane in very small amounts, but also releases far more sulfur dioxide. We'll come back to that in a moment. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's a much cooler process, lower temperature, in which warm rock in the deep Earth is reacting with water and CO2 and converting the form of rock called olivine into a different mineral called serpentine and releasing methane in the process. So either one of these is a potential candidate for the release on Mars.
1-800-989-8255 is our phone number. Talking with Michael Mumma of NASA, talking about this mysterious plume. Does the plume shoot out of something, like a big plume?
Well, most people would think of a plume as, for example, a geyser,
right,
or a plume of water shooting out of a water hose. But this is not at all what we mean by a plume. The plume we're referring to is actually a plume more like a huge cloud of pollution that would waft in from a city over the countryside or even from a different country into our countries. This plume on Mars has a dimension that's measured in thousands of kilometers, almost the size of half the United States, if you like.
Wow.
Yeah, and at the center of this plume, we identify three specific regions where areas of release where the methane apparently is emerging from the subsurface of Mars.
Wow. Now, one of the biggest mysteries you also mentioned at this news conference was, if you have so much methane coming out, why isn't there so much left, right? It's coming out in such huge amounts. Where's it going?
Well, that's right. In fact, we observed these major releases in March, January and March of 2003. And yet just barely over one Mars year later, we found that at the equinox season, this was about 6 months later on Mars essentially, about half the methane had vanished. It was not anywhere present in the atmosphere. And so we infer that the lifetime of methane after release from the subsurface is very short. It could be as short as only one Earth year in destroying about half of it. And this is actually quite puzzling. It led to some brand new ideas.
And so where is it going? What kind of ideas were they?
Well, there's a team at the University of Michigan led by Professor Sushil Atreya. And they came up with a novel idea that the dust in Mars' atmosphere may actually be charging up to high levels, kind of like a static electricity would develop as you walk across the carpet in a dry room. And then when you reach for a piece of metal connected to a ground, you're going to get a shock. Well, in a similar way, these dust particles in the atmosphere of Mars might develop literal electric discharges from their edges, and trying to discharge this high voltage potential. And that discharge can actually cause the creation of a new superoxidant, a molecule which can actually combine with methane and destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
The prime candidate is a molecule called peroxide, which, of course, I would say at least half of your listeners would know of that because it's the same chemical that's used to bleach hair.
Hydrogen peroxide.
You
yeah.
bet it.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. So is there any evidence that tilts your thinking in, or lack of evidence of something that tilts your thinking one way or the other, either biological or geological?
Well, there is. In fact, I mentioned earlier that volcanoes produce a lot more sulfur dioxide than they do methane. And so when we compare the abundance of sulfur dioxide on Mars relative to methane, we find that indeed SO2 is very low in abundance compared with what belches out from terrestrial volcanoes. So this would tend to argue against active volcanism, at least of the type that is active on Earth, as being responsible for this gas on Mars. But, of course, we don't know whether serpentinization, this other process I mentioned, the low-temperature geochemical process, could be occurring. We don't know for sure whether it is or not. And, we don't really know that we have biology at work either. So we need to make a number of careful tests and diagnostic measurements in order to further constrain these possibilities.
Can you do that from so far away?
Well, you can, in fact. We are using several of the world's largest telescopes, some on Mauna Kea in Hawaii at an altitude of almost 3 miles, 14,000 feet. And beginning this August, we'll be using a telescope in the southern hemisphere in Chile. One of the very large new European telescopes with our European colleagues will be investigating the methane from that site. So what we can do with these is we can actually search for not only the methane, but also other gases that are released along with it, such as ethane or propane if it's released from a standard hydrocarbon deposit on Earth, for example. You might see multiple kinds of this natural gas being released, so we can test for that. And on the other hand, we can look for gases that would be released only by biology if they're similar to Earth, things like nitrogen, dinitrogen oxide, N2O, and several other things such as H2S, hydrogen sulfide, and so forth. So these are the kinds of tests we can do from Earth. There are some that we cannot do from Earth very well. We would like to measure both the isotopic ratios in hydrogen atoms and also in carbon atoms, because we know that life on Earth dislikes heavy carbon, for example. It tends to combine with light carbon, and so the methane, if formed by biogenesis on Earth, is usually depleted in carbon-13, the heavier isotope. So by comparing that on Mars, we can begin to gain some understanding as to whether biology could be at work or not.
So we need to send another rover there or something.
Well, in fact, there's one on the way. It hasn't been launched yet, but it will be launched in 2011. It's called the Mars Science Laboratory at the moment. And it has instruments on board that are tailored at making such measurements of rare isotopes in methane and other potential biomarker gases.
Mm-hmm. So would the new mantra then be follow the methane instead of follow the water? I heard that saying expressed yesterday.
Well, that's right. I mean, follow the carbon was one for a while, and then follow the water, and perhaps follow the methane is the right strategy. But we think that the way to think of this is that this discovery represents the first evidence that Mars is an active planet, not just something, a planet that underwent development billions of years ago, and we can see this now in the geological record, but a planet that's currently active. And so this opens a new window, a new dimension, if you like, into this exciting place. But it also means we need to adjust our thinking about how we go about exploiting that new window, that new line of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
It clearly is going to imply that we want to eventually put probes down at the places where the most interesting release is occurring. So we have a lot of work to do in order to identify those spots. But clearly one of the areas we've looked at already and identified as a region of active release is a canyon called Nearly Fossae, fancy word. It's kind of like a continent name on Earth. But it's a place where earlier observations of minerals had found things that it could only form in liquid water, particularly clay minerals called phyllosilicates, and also carbonate minerals like limestone, mm-hmm. which could be either from life forms or not. You can form it in several ways. But the key point is they're made in liquid water, and now we see methane emerging from that same region in large abundance. So this becomes a prime region for exploration, and as you may know, Ira, it was one of the five finalists for the landing site for the Mars Science Lab that's supposed to be launched in 2011.
Is it moving way up now?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's back in the running. It was actually eliminated from the running in December because the site is a little bit challenging to reach. It's a little too high for the parachute to slow the and retro rockets to slow the lander properly, and it's also a relatively rough site in terms of its surface terrain. But now with this new discovery, we have a 2-year gap here between the launch that was expected in 2009, but now has slipped to 2011. We have another 2 years to rethink this, and I believe that this will be, in fact, reexamined to see if indeed those other mm-hmm. Issues can be overcome.
So you have two serendipitous things that happen. One is that the launch slipped, so you can maybe redirect, right?
Well, that's right.
Where you would have gone by now.
Maybe someone out there is looking out for us.
And you have this new source of methane. That combines with the other clues that you have.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the right way is not to jump to a conclusion about which of these possibilities is actually producing methane, but rather to follow each possibility, identify what new tests we need to make in order to see whether that was correct mm-hmm. or not, and then go down the path a little further in each direction until we see which one is emerging.
Mm-hmm.
We may find, Ira, that there are some vents on Mars that are actually mainly biologically driven, and perhaps there are other ones that are actually driven by geochemistry. Could be that we have some of each.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Michael Mumma of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt on Science Friday from NPR News. So it sounds like a bonanza happening just when the budgets are all being cut.
Well, you know, it's funny. I made a comment in yesterday's press conference that was broadcast worldwide, as you know. And I commented, now look, folks, without regard to budgets and without regard to politics and other planned missions, here's what I think we should do. If I were just thinking of this as a scientific perspective,
and
I think we should, in fact, go forward and map Mars over at least 2 Mars years. Do the entire surface daily or weekly, monthly. Try to identify all of the sites that are active, which ones repeat from year to year, which do not, which ones are likely biochemical and geological or biological in origin. And this way, build a data I won't call it a data cube because that has only three dimensions. I'll call it a data polygon, a huge database which basically will tell us, let us look at this in detail, tell us the various chemistries of these gases coming out.
Let me ask you one question because we're running out of time. If this is a geological emission, would it be from old, if it were a life form, would it be a living form, or would it be left over from an old life form that's just escaping to the surface now?
Well, that is a possibility. We can't actually identify the age of the life form the process that is producing the methane at the present time. That's going to require a lot more work and much more in situ sampling and so on before we can answer that question.
But there could be life living below the surface that's close enough to the heat to get enough heat to survive, because we have salty regions like that here on Earth.
Well, in fact, there are, in fact, many analogs on Earth. There is a life form living deep below the surface in South Africa, which does not live on energy derived from the sun, but rather lives on energy derived from radiation in the rock, the nuclear radiation through the decay of nuclide, which destroys local water in fissures there, and then provides hydrogen atoms, which combine to make an energy source for the microbe that lives in that region. That microbe is does not produce methane, but it does produce hydrogen sulfide. And we have other microbes elsewhere that produce methane, which can, or some that eat methane for food. So it turns out these critters are highly adaptable, and we can well imagine that there was a methanogen and methanotroph living under the deep permafrost of Mars in regions that have been isolated from the surface for many, many millions of years, even billions.
So one might be making it and one might be eating it.
That's quite right. Yes, indeed.
And that would explain getting rid of the methane.
We think the methane destruction is not related to eating the methane, because what we see is escaped into the atmosphere. We think actually the destruction is related to this superoxidant material that's produced by normal processes, and probably is the methane that escapes in the atmosphere is reacting with that material.
Well, Mars continues to surprise us. Too bad we can't get those little rovers over there.
We'd love to.
We'll have to wait for the big one.
Absolutely.
To be repositioned. Thank you, Dr. Mumba, for taking time to be with us.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Michael Mumba is Senior Planetary Scientist and Director of the Goddard Center for Astrobiology at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. Short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the history of pheromones. Pheromones. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News.